Well, I would rather have had it the other way, you know. They should just have gone, been going on. Then I would have been released from this daunting task. And it's been a long, long day. Very exciting, very rewarding. And I will make it even a little longer. So hoping you will bear with me. First of all, I would like to acknowledge MoMA's director, Glenn Lowry, for supporting this important initiative. And of course, I want to warmly thank the conference organizers, among them Deborah Y., Connie Butler, Alexandra Schwartz, and I know there are many others too. But and also for inviting me today as a respondent. As I said, I really find this a daunting task. I think Griselda should have continued. She was on the right track. And I have to admit, I accepted it with some hesitation because I may have a mixed perspective, being from Europe but partly living in New York, not knowing anymore where I am. But it may also be a more positive view of the feminist future than we heard maybe somewhere this afternoon. As I anticipate that the 21st century will be the century of the feminine principle. And if the feminist future is commensurate with the success of its symposium at MoMA, it may very well be an indication that my sense is justified. So to start with, I have to address the paradox of feminism. Feminism is based on the premise of gender, while it is aimed at abolishing the separation. Women organize themselves while they aim to make this categorization meaningless. Indeed, as we have discussed, not all women are feminists, and not all feminists are women. On a personal note, I think my son Samuel, who's working for the UN on women's rights in Africa, is more of a feminist than I am. And my daughters too, of course, Eva being with me here today. And each could give their own examples. And for example, Muhammad Yunus, the man who invented the microcredit, comes to mind. And perhaps we should say, and even more so today, female and male practitioners of feminism, I haven't found anything better. So, but I leave it to you to find maybe something better. So why do I have this strong sense that they, we, will shape this century? Is it the celebratory sense of accomplishment, or rather a worry sense for survival? As I firmly believe only such women and men can safeguard our habitat on Earth from total devastation. What has become clear from the excellent lectures and inspiring performances and comments by the panelists on this first day of the symposium is that in the last decades of the 20th century, a new approach to art and life, promoted by feminist artists and writers, has slowly permeated our ethics and aesthetics worldwide, be it with different degrees of intensity and different to a different effect in different countries and cultures. Though feminism, as discussed here, could too easily seem to be overly concerned with the past, however broad its reach beyond the art scene, and I want to stress this, as became clear also today, a lot of this work is done outside the art world. And 30 years ago, Lucy Lippert, who this morning gave us a passionate overview of feminist art history in America in her keynote address, defined feminist culture as a revolutionary strategy, as a basic set of values common to socialist, radical, lesbian, cultural, and other brands of feminism, of which the functions were raising consciousness, inviting dialogue, and transforming culture itself. Its indirect influence, indirect in the sense that building awareness took much longer than we anticipated, cannot be underestimated, and its direct application can be seen in the ways some women are taking up powerful positions in the political arena, not as testosterone tatchers or even virginas, as Marina Abramović described them so vividly, but as affirming their feminism and femininity, like Nancy Pelosi, first woman Speaker of the House, Hillary Clinton, first woman candidate for the presidency. I'm thinking of Michelle Bachelet in Chile and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Liberia's Iron Lady. Of course, in Asia, they were way ahead, like in India, Bangladesh, the Philippines. They had elected women long before. And everybody might give very different examples, but if, until now, leadership had been conceived as essentially strategic, divisive, and strictly vertically hierarchical, it may now be read in some instances as more horizontal, more inclusive and humane, less black and white, more gray, more provisional, less schematic, more based on interaction and compassion. Women have also been seen as realizing major projects together in the developing world, whether it be Wangari Maathai, who courageously stood up against the former oppressive regime in Kenya and founded the Green Belt Movement against desertification in Africa, or celebrity philanthropist Oprah Winfrey, who just founded the Leadership Academy for Girls in South Africa. It's also the case in the architectural arena. For example, the 21st Century Museum of Contemporary Art in Kanazawa in Japan, designed by Kazuyo Tsujima, who's also building the new museum together with Lisa Phillips in New York. And in Kanazawa, Tsujimi collaborated with Yuko Hasegawa, director and chief curator of the museum, who describes the concept, and I quote, 20th century modernism was driven by the three M's of man, money, and materialism. With the replacement of these three M's with the three C's of consciousness, collective intelligence, and coexistence, new forms of expression are now beginning to make their appearance. The 21st Century Museum of Contemporary Art in Kanazawa is an enormous catalytic device, the purpose of which is to convey the psychological products of these three C's to visitors, to ensure their effect and to revitalize everyone that comes into contact with the museum. End of quote. These innovative approaches are the result of newly developed parameters and perspectives, often defined by notions that have been advanced in former decades by women artists and writers, feminists and feminine notions of mutuality, connectivity, inclusion, and relation. And as Braha Ettinger recently pointed out, it is the working of the artwork that then produces the artist in the feminine, rather than the pre-existing status of the maker who confirms her femininity onto the work. End of quote. Such insights, of course, are not possible without a generation of feminists who I admire profoundly and who have paved the road. And these new ways of apprehending are the foundation for a feminist future if we don't want feminism to become locked in into its own circulation. And I will elaborate in looking at the histories that were presented today. In the 70s and 80s, the work of feminist activists and artists, as in the case of Marta Rosler, who's always been a real inspiration to me, and whose work Richard Meier addressed as both a remnant of the radical past and an active critique of the present, are later in the case of the Guerrilla Girls and Coco Fusco, The work often transgressed the racial, ethnic, and gender dictates of society, asking us to consider the ambiguous boundary between self and other, not with horror and fear, a convention of exclusion on which much of society is founded, but as offering an opening onto a new form of identity construction. Critical of the existent institutional structures, which consistently excluded work on the basis of gender and color, these artists revealed the unacknowledged underlying agendas of a near ubiquitous patriarchy and had to reconceive themselves as subject matter out of place, inventively mapping reality at the fringes of vision while also reshaping imagery, taking on rebellious significance from a female and black point of view. However, as Lucy Lippert indicated, feminist art here was often preoccupied with fending off or competing with a male-dominated mainstream, and we spent a lot of the 70s remodeling our lives and our textual and formal languages to make room for women's experiences, end of quote. Interleaving language, alterity, and space, their work successfully formed a configuration of a ground for resistance against the rules that govern the intelligible invocation of identity as they operate through stylized repetition of bodily gestures and movements, as was also described, and I'm very happy that Geeta Kapoor is here, by Geeta in the later work of Rumana Hussain and Naviat Altaf, and also the stunning video we saw. But all too often, the art remained socially constructed in opposition, its antagonism becoming part of the feminist canon. In fact, if the campaign during the second wave of feminist activism was mainly focusing on the notion of exclusion of visibility, which may have and absolutely been necessary in order to grasp the gravity of the situation, as was exemplified and is still exemplified in the work of the Guerrilla Girls, it ultimately revealed that this strategy paralleled the notion of exclusion in binary thinking associated with the dominant canon, the set of practices and standards that delineates the realm of creative possibility within existing structures. By defining right or wrong within an institution, a structure, a discipline, the canon can effectively circumscribe the potential of each individual, doing the impermissible, representing explicit sexuality, violence, obscenity, for example, may be wrong in the sense of being demeaning and offensive, but it remains within the purview of the canon. In the end, it concerns a disruption remaining on the surface without having enough significant effect on the core of the matter. And I would maintain, as I did in Inside the Visible, that to touch deeper levels of collective consciousness, the work would have to become more and more subtly inventive to realize a new freedom outside the recognized transgressions. It would need to take into account such ideas as slow time and conversation in bringing about gradual but profoundly affecting social change. As identity was increasingly perceived to be stable and fixed, it became a problem to be reckoned with in and of itself. And art practice reached a point where it necessarily consisted of an attempt to find individual expression of self by overcoming identity, or as Geeta Kapoor formulated it, through either over-identification, indicative of giving up rather than gaining identity, or through a necessary attenuation of identity, a disidentification, by freeing oneself from the culturally imposed templates, thus countering the existing institutional culture, its norms, categorizations, and ideological clichés. According to Geeta, feminism further helps recognize the interdependency of ideological stances, the exclusionary nature of all definitional systems, all categorized identities, and a contingent understanding of subject positions. However, in the 70s, as the limitations of confrontational and unteorized strategies had been acknowledged, the foundation for the more heavily theoretical work of the 80s had been laid, with French psychoanalytical theory invading the academies and also phototext-based work that was competing with the mass media's misrepresentations of women, such as we know in the very influential and not incidentally witty work of Marta Rossler and also Coco Fusco, who gave this very disturbing but amazing and revealing performance today, revealing parallelism with military strategies. Satire as it may be. So feminist art practice increasingly crossed disciplinary boundaries, challenging the canon as well as the phallic paradigm of binary thinking, rejection or assimilation, aggression or identification, that shapes everything from how art is viewed to how societies treat immigrants. And I owe a lot to Griselda Pollock, who has, of course, written extensively about this. Against this restrictive modernist axis, artists posed questions of distribution and audience, of the feminine principle, that is, art making imbued with reciprocity, an enactment of exchange, a participatory thought in the relationship between artists and viewers. The artists have included many women, and honestly, also men. Some of them recognized the great potential for notions of relation and empathy to provide a more profound understanding of what art can be. But because their work could not easily be apprehended through the prevalent modernist and postmodernist criteria, it has also taken a long time to be valued and acknowledged. What then became essential at a point in the 90s was the wording of this relational, flexible, and fluid space of co-emergence, involving not only an altered perception of art, but also a redefinition of the feminine. Some artists have used terms such as relational and matrixial, including metaphorically loaded images of modern and unborn child, to conceptualize an archaic experience of several unknown partial subjects co-emerging and co-affecting, and to generate a symbol for an intersubjective encounter radically different from the historically predominant phallic model. In this naming, Braha Ettinger's writing played an immense role. As they allow the feminine to become legible in works of art, radically extending and reshaping our understanding of some artistic practices and their temporary eclipse. Because by introducing into culture another symbolic signifier to stand beside the phallus, Griselda Pollock argues, we could be on the way to permitting the invisible feminine bodily specificity to enter and realign aspects of our consciousness and unconsciousness. This feminist theoretization is not an alternative in opposition to the phallus, rather the opening up of the symbolic field to extended possibilities which in a non-phallic way do not need to displace the other to be. End of quote. Here art is a process of creation that is always several, connected, and co-productive, and follows the logic of subjectivity as encounter, that works not through cuts and fusions, but through constant retunings and shiftings. It concerns the self as an empathic structure of relations held together through conversation and exchange. Here, art proceeds, in Carol Armstrong's words, along the lines of polymorphous productivity and practice, generative, not prescriptive, negotiation and relation, not rupture and deconstruction, embodied in a decentered, plural here and now, rather than utopian or dystopian in orientation, embracing rather than disdaining the materiality of artistic thought. End of quote. Of course, we need to challenge the existing canon, but we also need to bring forward ideas not based on essence or negation, but on the notion of an artist working through traces coming from others to whom she or he is linked. As knowledge is not a substance, but a structural dynamic, which is essentially dialogic, there is the necessity of sustained interlocution in human relationships. We could describe this as a kind of transference, likened to an intersubjective encounter with a communicational dimension in psychoanalytic practice that might be projected onto a cultural matrix, specifically in the dynamics of viewing, as Mignon Nixon has suggested. And I quote her, "Is there then anything in this transference of transference that is specific to the figure of the woman artist? Might the woman artist be seen as a creative effect of transference and culture?" Importantly, the dialogic of transference and its intergenerational and intersubjective dynamics have been the subject of artists and theorists who already, since the 70s, exposed its potential radicalism. End of quote. It is their work in time that has inspired this new relational model. It is in this context that artists presenting large-scale collaborative and social projects should be considered. For these artists, the artwork is only realized in togetherness, dialogue, and communality, questioning, in effect, the validity of the modernist notion of separateness in the formation of art. And as Lucy said, collaboration has come back into style, but as Coco Fusco also warned, as of the corporate model, which is also, of course, based on collaboration. Significantly, these art practices and the critical writings they generate let us formulate a different vision of art as an experience that is premised upon subjective transitivity. At a drawing center, I conceived of an institutional model that still allowed for such an empathic experience in this century, although alternative as we once knew it may not be possible anymore, its significance being shifted, even co-opted. This interrelational model and its potential of interreliance were at the base not only of the program, but also of the working method. It promoted an aesthetics of reciprocity within a changed criticality defined by reconstruction, inclusiveness, connectivity, binding impulses, and even a notion of healing. In contradistinction to an old modernist model, the radical and inventive strategies of which were dependent on alienation, separation, negativity, violence, and deconstruction. I couldn't agree more with Lucy Lippert, who asserted already in 1980 that feminism's greatest contribution to the future of art has probably been precisely its lack of contribution to modernism. Sadly, the Drawing Center's relational model of empathy was repressed. However, the imperative of art is to always continue, even when it has become impossible to speak, for example, due to censorship. because the work of art can change the intensity of existence of what Alain Badiou has named the inexistent. As a construction of an artificial thing in the world, the work of art is made with materials of this world in such a way that it becomes possible to inscribe an inexistent, recognizing that in this inscribing may be the impermissible, may be an impossibility. Art is thus the possible inscription of an impossibility, or what is considered as not yet existing, and as such, contemporary art, and I especially think feminist art, can be conceived as the matrix for transformative politics. And this is exactly what feminist art practice and recent art working in, of, and from the feminine has been doing and continues to realize, to bring into existence, to inscribe what was inexistent, eclipsed, invisible, yet undefined, unspeakable. It is also in this sense that I would interpret, as Carrie Lambert suggested, Rebecca Gompert's work and the Women on Waves NGO. An extraordinary instance of the intersection of feminist activism and art, holding open a space between cultural production and political action, and driven by a revolutionary determination to replace what is by what could be. The project, and I quote Carrie, "The project actually operating through its fictiveness far more than its actuality can be read as an attempt to inscribe another world as possible." And as Carrie concludes, "The question is whether acting in the representational realm, provoking imagination, raising hope, creating the possible, is not something actual in itself. Inherent in the idea of activist art is the idea that art is not a retreat from the real, but is in and of it." Interestingly, in Lambert's analysis regarding the activist art of Women on Waves, which is here configured precisely in its relative autonomy as not quite real and slightly extra-legal, and effectively as action without place, I can see a connection with the new trend of politics that some philosophers are hoping for through art. To quote Alain Badiou, "Today we have to create a new trend of politics, beyond the domination of the places, beyond the social, national, racial places, beyond gender and religion, a purely displaced politics, with absolute equality as its fundamental concept. This sort of politics will be an action without place, beyond the law of places and of centralization of power." End of quote. Thus, Women on Waves participate in this new model of power, working on the politics of reproductive rights, in the politics of globalization, and its free trade zone outside territorial waters, but most of all, and evidently, given our discussions here, in the open space of art itself, one would hope. With the notion in mind that every work of art and also art working can open a new possibility, the practitioners of the feminine principle must define art's imperative as continuously questioning the existing structures. As Richard Mayer said earlier of his own experience, and it was, and it is, feminism or effeminism that taught me the value of returning to artists, works, and cultural episodes that might otherwise be dismissed, disdained, or simply written out of history, as was demonstrated so well by Beatrice Colomina in the case of Elaine Gray, who doesn't figure with E1027 in most of histories of modern architecture. is, however, as many here have attested, no question that feminism has filtered out into the dominant culture and has had an amazingly generative and positive impact on thinking beyond the limitations of the establishment. It also bespeaks, as Richard Mayer pointed out, the revolutionary ambitions of women's liberation to remake virtually every aspect of society, from local community centers to global conflicts, extending far beyond any simple affirmation of identity. Today, a generation of younger artists is producing work that we can proudly consider as soundly inspired by, among other factors, the legacies of feminist practice and critical theory, and defined by notions of tolerance and transference within the relational and the transsubjective, in a way also solving the paradox of feminism and defining it more and more as a state of mind, a way of life. In the end, a transformative recognition may lay, and in some cases has laid, the groundwork for a transformative politics, whereas binary thinking is presently making for an increasingly and dangerously polarized world. And as this conference rehearses a feminist legacy, its account can sound, unfortunately, at times isolationist. And the perception of a feminist future perhaps necessarily incomplete and inconclusive. Major feminist artists and critics in other parts of the world are not enough represented in it. Nevertheless, together with them, we must feel that feminist practice in so many countries still has an important role to fulfill. In this sense, I find considerable hope in knowing, to take just one example, that in recent years, the number of young Iranian women who have been admitted to university has risen dramatically. In the last 5 years alone, Iranian women have made up more than 60% of university entrants. The growing numbers of young women in Iran's universities is considered a surprising phenomenon that has already brought substantial change to the country's traditionally male-dominated society. The women see it as a way to earn greater freedom and social respect. As feminists, we know now that this new generation of educated Iranian women will forge social change in the decades ahead. The third wave of feminism has started. This is real revolution in a geopolitical context, with the web as connector, no longer the destructive discussion of essentialism versus constructivism, Lacanian, Freudian, or Marxist feminism, but the productive international confluence of Eastern and Western, perhaps even green feminism, each with its particularities, promoting an art taking on in a productive rather than endlessly subversive manner. No more deployment of arms and troops, but peace talks and co-alliances, questioning and negotiating, not in a confrontational but sympathetic way, to slowly but surely build consciousness, listening to the many different voices in a connecting world, not as in high-tech, highly connected, but as in the Hindu concept of Indra's net, of which I would like to read the following beautiful description. Far away in the heavenly abode of the great god Indra, there is the wonderful net, which has been hung by some cunning artificer in such a manner that it stretches out indefinitely in all directions. In accordance with the extravagant tastes of deities, the artificer has hung a single glittering jewel at the net's every node. And since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars of the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of these jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we will discover that in its polished surface, there are reflected all the other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is also reflecting all the other jewels, so that the process of reflection is infinite. End of quote. A metaphor for the non-dual nature of existence, Indra's net bears ready comparison with works produced by women artists in the last decades, such as the reticularia of the Venezuelan artist Gego and Vazanta, or transition of the Indian artist Ranjani Shetar. Proclaiming the interconnectedness of all things, these nets pronounce the interdependency of everything and everyone. When any node in a net is touched, all other nodes are affected. Each reflects the others, and each is wholly dependent for its existence on its reflection in all of the others. It embodies the notion of subjectivity as encounter, as the feminine principle that has to inspire us throughout the 21st century. It may be the discursive space that Gita was speaking about. This is our sole hope, not only for a feminist future, but for the future of our world in crisis. I want to thank you. But I thought, as a way of summarizing, I would like to end on a more positive and cheerful note. And I've asked my friend Carol Armstrong to join me here. I know we've been going back and forward about this, but Carol, can you come to the podium?
First, we have to do that. Don't worry, this is going to be short.
This is very short.
And hopefully fun. I think it was Richard who said that the art world is like high school.
Well, girls,
I don't know about the money
fun.
Part, no. But we have a high school skit for you to finish off today. And it needs props, so let us just do that and then. Here, some gaudy pink flowers. I don't know, we'll just put them. And here, I anoint you. Where's the end
here,
of it?
Here. Careful.
And here, you have to wear that.
I don't want to wear this.
All right. Well, good. There's some giggles already. That's reassuring. All right. What you're about to hear was not written for this event, but I'm happy to lend it to this event for what it's worth. And so it's not about art. It may or may not be some kind of art. It may or may not be some kind of poetry. What it is a series of couplets, which I have entitled Vagina Dialogues. And I dedicate it to a feminist future. Said one lip to the other, do you know what Lucy Rigoret said?
Said the second lip to the first, yes, she said we should converse.
Because we're not one, we're two. And instead of monologues, we should have dialogues.
In fact, we could even have trilogues because we're not a binary pair.
We're much too labial for that.
No, sorry. I think it's labile.
Anyway, seriously, said the first, what's the topic of conversation today?
Well, said the second, did you hear the one about this sex, which is not one?
No, how does it go?
Well, it means we're not a sex. We have no sex.
Oh, yes, I know that one. We're a wound, the mark of castration and absence.
It also means we have no libido of our own. And furthermore, it means we don't exist.
Yeah, that's right. We're a figment of the imagination. Jacques Lacan's imagination, his mirror stage.
We're a function of language. We represent the power to speak that we do not have.
To create or imagine ourselves, to gain access to the real.
To see inside the invisible. To know our own bodies outside of language, inside of lack.
Ah, yes, I've heard that one. But did you know it has another meaning, too?
Yes, I think I've heard that, too. Me, too. I've heard that one.
Okay, here's how it goes. It also means we're more than one, we're two.
Or even more, we're in excess, too much, an overflow.
But didn't Jacques Lacan say that one, too, already? Didn't he say that we were God, or joy, or jouissance?
As the French would say.
You can't say it so well in English.
Yes, that's right, he did. But it's not entirely clear that he meant what he said.
Or said what he meant. Also, he said we weren't necessary.
No. What he meant was that our orgasm wasn't necessary.
Well, I think that's what he meant, but how can you be sure?
But the question is, and yes, it is a question, moving to the topic from the joke.
Yes, the question is, what do we want? What are we? Do we exist?
Are we different or the same, just inside out?
Are we less or more, nothing at all, or are we God?
Can we be penetrated to the core? Can we be known? Or are we a jamming of the works?
Yes, the theoretical machine. Please stop finishing my sentences for me.
Oh, don't interrupt. Allow me to finish. Allow me to speak.
What about me? I want to speak too. The question is, what did Lucerigere mean?
That one's just as hard. No, I mean soft. I mean, it's difficult. It's complicated.
It's convoluted, like our sexual system and the brain, the largest of the sex organs.
Actually, from a certain point of view, we look rather like the brain.
And two, it's not solid, it's liquid, like fluid water, like aqueous air.
Like a membrane, a medium.
What Isaac Newton called a menstruum.
Like the fabric of the universe.
We give and take, we fold and invert.
We expand and we contract.
We dilate, we shrink, and we swell.
We always have two sides and more.
Like a bolt of reversible cloth.
We move as things move inside us.
We exert pressure and respond to pressure.
As water does, as water flows.
As water moves around rock and wears rock down.
We respond to heat and to touch, but not to sight.
We have many real organs, not one symbolic one. And we have many forms of pleasure, not one. We are not a single thing.
Our boundaries are unclear.
We are beside ourselves.
We're not linear, and we're not a form.
Or a gestalt. What we are
is manifold. We have vagina or vulva, or call it cunt.
We have uterus, or call it womb.
Electrically wired to the breast.
To the nipples, aureoled.
We have cervix, we have ovaries.
We have fallopia.
We have follicles, we have tubes.
We have muscles, we have folds.
We have lips, we have mouth.
We have tunnel, we have orifice, or call it oracle.
We have clitoris, we might have a G-spot.
We can come in many different ways, or not.
Some of which are recognized as legitimate.
And some are not. We can spasm, we can ejaculate.
Or not. We are the dark continent.
We can be ingeminate. We can germinate. We can gestate and menstruate.
We can incubate egg.
We can deliver ourselves of child.
We can be environment, rather like outer space or inner.
Or we can be black hole that sucks everything into it.
The Mutterscheide.
The mother chute.
A density that looks like nothingness.
A chaos that is the other side of creation.
The ending or the beginning of it.
An explosion that is an implosion.
Still, they say we don't exist.
But on the other hand, who is they?
They are the authorities.
We are us, ourselves, and I.
We are more than one. We are two.
And more. Sometimes we speak as one.
And sometimes we do not.
Sometimes we agree.
Sometimes we do not.
Sometimes we agree to disagree.
Put your lips together and blow.
Put your lips together and clap.
Stretch your lips apart and shout it.
From one end of the cosmos to the other.
Oh God, I lost the last page. Here it
is. It's coming to a climax, come on.
By the way, this is all metaphor, you know?
Or is that metonym?
But seriously.
Or not. Katrine!